Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. Early trading markets in Europe have tumbled following stock slumps in Asia. That's after President Trump signaled he would not back down on tariff policies. And what the president said about China. Zimbabwe has suspended all tariffs on all U.S. goods. The move comes a few days after the White House imposed an 18% rate on imports from the African country. The Trump administration has to reinstate two board members after firing them. The case might now head to the Supreme Court. Rising rivers, flooded neighborhoods, communities in danger. Severe weather continues as the death toll rises from storms in the South and Midwest. Thousands rally in Paris to back Marine Le Pen after a court banned her from elections. The ruling has sparked debate in France over fairness and political motives. A U.S.-based dance company facing ongoing bomb threats. Police in Taiwan now trace the source of the threats to a city in northwestern China where an institute of tech giant Huawei is located. More on the investigation.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Monday, April 7th. I'm Stephanie Cox. In a Truth Social post today, President Donald Trump gave China an ultimatum to revoke its 34% tariffs. The president said if China does not withdraw the tariffs by tomorrow, April 8th, the U.S. will impose an additional 50% tariffs on China effective April 9th. Trump also said all talks with China concerning meetings with the U.S. will be terminated by then. Trump added, quote, negotiations with other countries will begin taking place immediately. Trump also said he spoke to the Japanese prime minister this morning. He said Ishiba is sending a top team to negotiate the tariffs. And Trump defended his sweeping tariffs on imports from other countries. He said yesterday that the tariffs are aimed at fixing trade imbalances, not at causing a global stock market sell-off.
I don't want anything to go down, but sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something.
Trump's comments came as global markets tumbled this morning in response to the new U.S. tariffs. European shares plunged to a 16-month low this morning. In the U.S., the S&P 500 was down over 20% from its all-time highs earlier this morning, edging near bear market territory. But market indices then moved sharply higher. That followed a report that Trump was considering a 90-day tariff pause on all countries except China. The report cited White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett. The White House later clarified that the report was wrong, calling it fake news. Meanwhile, the White House says more than 50 countries have reached out for negotiations. And here's an update from the markets in Asia.
Asian markets are plummeting over U.S. tariffs and China's reaction. Tokyo's Nikkei 225 index lost nearly 8% after markets opened Monday. Investor panic caused Mizuho and Mitsubishi Financial Groups to both lose around 10%. China's markets also fell, and they don't usually follow global trends. When markets closed Friday, e-commerce giant Alibaba Group Holdings fell almost 10%. South Korea's KOSPI lost more than 5.5%. Meanwhile, exchange rates also felt the effects. The dollar fell to 145.56 Japanese yen from 146.94 yen. President Trump, however, says he isn't especially concerned.
What's going to happen with the market, I can't tell you, but I can tell you our country has gotten a lot stronger. And eventually, it'll be a country like no other. It'll be the most dominant country economically in the world.
Speaking aboard Air Force One Sunday, Trump said he will not make a deal with China unless the trade deficit is solved.
We have a $1 trillion trade deficit with China. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year we lose with China. And unless we solve that problem, I'm not going to make a deal. Now, I'm willing to deal with China, but they have to solve their surplus.
Trump said on social media the only way the trade deficit can be cured is with tariffs. Director of the National Economic Council, Kevin Hassett, told ABC News on Sunday that more than 50 countries had reached out for negotiations over tariffs.
I got a report from the USTR last night that more than 50 countries have reached out to the president to begin a negotiation. But they're doing that because they understand that they bear a lot of the tariff.
Hassett didn't name those countries, but we know so far Vietnam, Thailand and Taiwan have said they are willing to enter into talks. White House senior counselor Peter Navarro went on Fox News Sunday to defend Trump's tariffs.
What President Trump wants to do is turn Detroit back into Detroit instead of having Detroit in Mexico now like they have it.
A baseline 10% tariff on imported goods went into effect Saturday. Trump's reciprocal tariffs on individual countries go into effect Wednesday.
Negotiations over retaliation. European Union ministers broadly agreed today that the bloc should prioritize sitting at the negotiation table rather than hitting back at the U.S. over the new reciprocal tariffs. The agreement came even as the group prepared the first set of targeted countermeasures.
We stand ready to negotiate with the United States. Indeed, we have offered zero-for-zero tariffs for industrial goods, as we have successfully done with many other trading partners. Because Europe is always ready for a good deal, so we keep it on the table.
The 27-nation bloc faces 25% import tariffs on steel and aluminum, and cars and reciprocal tariffs of 20% for almost all other goods. Trade ministers met in Luxembourg today to debate the EU's response. The bloc is likely to approve this week an initial set of targeted countermeasures on up to $28 billion of U.S. imports. But even that move has proven challenging. Trump has threatened a 200% counter tariff on EU alcoholic drinks if the bloc goes ahead with an earmarked 50% duty on U.S. bourbon. Meanwhile, Elon Musk said Saturday that he would like to see zero tariffs between the United States and Europe.
Effectively creating a free trade zone between Europe and North America. That's what I hope occurs. More freedom of people to move between Europe and North America, if they wish.
Zimbabwe has suspended all tariffs on all U.S. goods. The move comes a few days after the White House imposed an 18% rate on imports from the African country. The country's president wrote on X on Saturday that tariffs are a useful tool for safeguarding domestic employment in industrial sectors, but he wrote that the country maintains a policy of fostering friendly relations with all nations. Zimbabwe's main trading partners are South Africa, the United Arab Emirates, and China, but it does export tobacco and rice to the United States. And the House this week will take up the Senate budget blueprint. That's the next step in the GOP effort to implement President Trump's agenda. The Senate advanced the resolution in a mostly party-line vote early Saturday morning of 51-48. The only Republican opponents were Rand Paul of Kentucky and Susan Collins of Maine. However, there have already been warning signs that pushing the blueprint through the House could face challenges. Speaker Mike Johnson and GOP leaders are working to secure support. Fiscal conservatives have expressed concern over spending levels and the proposed debt ceiling increase of up to $5 trillion. The centerpiece of the Senate plan is making Trump's 2017 personal income tax cuts permanent. The Trump administration must reinstate two board members who've been fired recently. An appeals court in the District of Columbia Circuit released the ruling today. The court ruled that the administration can't remove the two Democratic members from federal labor boards. The White House sought to dismiss Gwynne Wilcox from the National Labor Relations Board and Kathy Harris from the Merit Systems Protection Board. The two had been let go amid Trump's efforts to downsize the federal government. Today's court ruling might pave the way for the case to be decided at the Supreme Court. Still to come, Taiwan says it's looking at zero tariffs and more investment with the U.S. What it means for the island and its most critical international supporter. Two border agents are facing charges for allegedly taking bribes and letting people into the country without proper documentation. And the Supreme Court deals a blow to gun rights advocates in New York. The High Court's decision follows one of its landmark Second Amendment rulings. Right after this break. Welcome back. Taiwan's President Lai Ching-te has addressed the recent 32% U.S. tariffs on Taiwanese imports, warning of its economic impact.
To address the reciprocal tariffs by the U.S., Taiwan has no plans to adopt retaliatory tariffs. There will be no change in corporate investment commitments to the U.S. as long as they are consistent with national interests. But we must ensure the U.S. clearly understands Taiwan's contributions to U.S. economic development. More importantly, we must actively seek to understand changes in the global economic situation, strengthen Taiwan-U.S. industry cooperation, elevate the status of Taiwan industries in global supply chains.
In a recorded message, he announced five government strategies to counter the move. The steps include tariff negotiations, support for affected industries, long-term development plans, strengthen Taiwan-U.S. cooperation, and industry lead listening tours. While Taiwan won't retaliate with tariffs, Lai stressed the need for unity and resilience, urging bipartisan support to safeguard Taiwan's export-driven economy. He emphasized that despite the setback, Taiwan remains globally competitive and committed to strengthening economic ties with the U.S. And on Sunday, President Lai Ching-te said Taiwan would offer zero tariffs and no retaliation, as we just heard at the start of negotiations with the U.S., while vowing to remove trade barriers. Joining us now to discuss is Epoch Times reporter Jacob Berg. Jacob, good to have you with us. You've been looking at this in depth recently. How will Taiwan deal with the economic impact of new U.S. tariffs, especially in industries other than semiconductors?
Well, as we just heard, in addition to the zero tariffs and the no retaliation, as they begin negotiations with President Trump, they're going to work on removing trade barriers with the United States. And the critical component is going to be working with Taiwan companies to increase investments in the United States and also try to move some of those companies away from Taiwan and closer to the U.S. Some of them are even already in Mexico.
Right, so it's already happening. And can you elaborate on the potential long-term impacts of Taiwan's zero tariffs proposal on U.S.-Taiwan relations and its impact on Taiwan's economy?
Yeah, it's important, especially as we look towards what's going on with China. A lot of companies are eager to get out of the area as China's ramping up their war games and their pressure on Taiwan. And despite the lack of formal diplomatic ties, the United States is Taiwan's biggest supporter in this. And a lot of those companies will have an opportunity now to use those investments to move out of Taiwan, move either directly into the United States, as we saw with TSMC last month, or, as I said, move even into Mexico, where they could potentially deal with the United States-Canada-Mexico Free Trade Agreement and the carve-outs for tariffs with that.
Yeah, that looks like a promising avenue. With China opposing Taiwan's closer ties with the U.S., as it always has done, will that affect Taiwan's strategy here?
For sure. They've already said that they're going to encourage companies, like I mentioned, to take this opportunity and use whatever money they can in investments to move into Mexico and in the United States and outside of Taiwan as China continues going in that direction. And they also have the opportunity to look towards the example of, like I said, TSMC and propose new investments moving forward into other industries outside of even just semiconductors, because Taiwan is a huge exporter to the United States. For instance, there's electronic parts. They provide a lot of power supplies for electronics. They export a lot of drywall screws, a lot of tools, petrochemicals, natural gas, things like that. So it's not just semiconductors that are going to be affected by this, even though that's a huge industry. A lot of their exports will, the various companies that work in those sectors will have this opportunity to move money into the United States.
Yeah, and TSMC is a key player in Taiwan's economy. Could its new investment in the U.S. influence future trade talks?
For sure. President Lai mentioned that trade, that investment proposal specifically as an example. And so I imagine as they move forward with these negotiations with President Trump, that'll be a really critical example to use. And especially other companies, if they come forward, they come to the table and they have their own proposals, that will be kind of like the beginning domino in what will probably be a really fruitful set of negotiations between the two countries.
Relations between Taiwan and the U.S. have been in the spotlight for quite some time in light of China's ambitions towards the democratically ruled island. Is there anything missing from this point in, at this point in time, is there anything missing from the conversation, do you think, in regards to the relationship between the U.S. and Taiwan?
As far as what we're seeing right now,
security and trade.
I imagine a lot of the, like I said, a lot of these companies, they're operating in Taiwan right now, and that the security aspect is a huge component of wanting to move into the United States if they have those opportunities for those investments to move those companies like TSMC is doing in Arizona. And so I imagine, like I said, especially with the energy companies, you know, if they get a security guarantee moving those operations overseas into the United States, for example, that would be a really, really important security guarantee for those companies, for Taiwan itself, if it's protecting those critical industries. So I imagine that would be a really, really critical component of negotiations between the United States and Taiwan moving forward, especially in light, like you said, of China's pressure on Taiwan as it increases.
Yeah, it has not let up. In fact, it is increasing. Thank you so much for your time today. Jacob Berg from the Epoch Times. Great to speak with you. And the Trump administration vows to continue fighting court orders all the way to the highest level. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi criticized the district judges taking legal action against President Trump's executive decisions.
It's basically a game of whack-a-mole with these district court judges around the country who have a tremendous amount of power. They believe they do. But that's why we're appealing all of these cases, of course, up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Just since January 20th, we've had over 170 lawsuits filed against us. That should be the constitutional crisis right there. 50 injunctions. They're popping up every single day, trying to control his executive power, trying to control where he believes our tax dollars should be allocated.
Bondi told Fox News yesterday that Trump would comply with the law, but she said Trump was elected with an overwhelming majority because the American people want what he campaigned on and that he's implementing that agenda at a rapid speed. Two border agents face charges for allegedly taking bribes and letting people in without proper documents. The agents were assigned to the busiest port of entry in the U.S. The two agents were assigned to the San Ysidro port of entry in San Diego. Investigators say they found evidence on their phones of communication with smugglers and discovered unexplained deposits in their bank accounts. Prosecutors say the agents waved through dozens of vehicles illegally. An attorney for one of the agents said the case is still in its early stages and his client has the presumption of innocence. It's not clear if the other agent has obtained legal representation. Investigators arrested the agents after detained migrant smugglers admitted they worked with border agents. Today, the Supreme Court declined to hear a challenge to New York firearms restrictions. The state imposed the regulations shortly after the justices struck down previous limits on carrying concealed handguns in 2022. Six New York residents appealed a lower court's decision that allowed the state to enforce licensing requirements and restrictions in certain locations. The dispute centered on New York's Concealed Carry Improvement Act. The government buildings, schools, healthcare facilities, theaters, bars, polling places, and Manhattan's Times Square are just a few examples. The new law also attempted to clarify a longstanding good moral character requirement for firearm license applications. The six plaintiffs argue that there is no historical tradition that exists to justify New York State's concealed carry restrictions. Rivers are rising and floods continue to worsen across the U.S. South and Midwest. Already waterlogged communities are being further threatened, battered by days of relentless rain and wind. NTD's Daniel Monahan reports on the storms that have claimed at least 20 lives since last week.
Tragedy has struck multiple states. In Kentucky, a 9-year-old boy died after getting swept away in floodwaters while walking to catch his school bus. In Arkansas, a 5-year-old boy passed away after a tree fell on his family's home and trapped him. And in Missouri, a 16-year-old volunteer firefighter died in a crash while putting his life on the line, trying to rescue people caught in the storm. And the danger is not over. Forecasters warned that flooding could persist for days as torrential rains lingered over many states, including Kentucky, Tennessee, and Alabama. Tornadoes are possible in Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. Meanwhile, from Texas to Ohio on Sunday, utilities scrambled to shut off power and gas, while cities deployed sandbags to protect homes and businesses. Reeves, a small town in northwest Tennessee, was almost entirely underwater on Sunday after a nearby river overflowed. Many of the town's 200 residents had evacuated at the request of the fire department, but some decided to stay in their homes. Dominic Scott is worried about his father.
Came here to check on my dad. He lives right over there by the baseball fields, and ain't really heard nothing from him.
Scott says the water line is right up to his doorstep, and if it keeps raining, it'll probably flood the house.
Insurance companies around here does not insure flood insurance on anybody that lives in Reeves because we're too close to the river and the levees.
Meanwhile, in Ohio, the Ohio River is expected to rise and reach 60 feet by Monday. In north central Kentucky, emergency officials ordered a mandatory evacuation for Falmouth and Butler, towns near the bend of the rising Licking River. 30 years ago, the river reached a record 50 feet, resulting in 5 deaths and 1,000 homes destroyed.
What's concerning for us and what we're watching for right now is the fact that south of us is still getting some rain, and this the Licking River is one of the few rivers around here that flows north into the Ohio River.
In Frankfort, Kentucky, residents traveled around by boat as flooding caused havoc in the region. Drone videos taken Sunday show low-lying areas in the city flooded, including a bourbon whiskey distillery. Frankfort's swollen Kentucky River kept rising on Sunday, forcing officials to divert traffic and turn off utilities to businesses in the area. The river's relentless waters here have nearly swallowed up homes. Torrential flooding also struck in Montgomery, Kentucky. Entire blocks could be seen covered in floodwater in Dawson Springs, Kentucky, over the weekend. Heavy rain and flash flooding are forecast to continue Monday and overnight into Tuesday across the southeast and Gulf Coast. With central Alabama at moderate risk, severe storms may bring damaging winds and isolated tornadoes. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
A leaked internal notice from China's CDC is raising alarm over a new mutated strain of H5N1 bird flu. It shows increased potential for human-to-human transmission. The document reveals more than 120 positive samples across China, many from live poultry markets and even symptomless poultry workers. The historic mortality rate of H5N1 bird flu in humans, reported by the World Health Organization, is around 50%. However, experts consider this an overestimate, as mild cases or cases without symptoms often go undiagnosed and unreported. The U.S. CDC says only one of the 70 cases of human infection detected in the United States since 2024 has died. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has met with the parents of another child who died of measles. Kennedy was in Texas today to meet with the family of an 8-year-old girl. The child was unvaccinated and had no underlying health conditions. Texas health officials said she died on Thursday in the hospital from measles pulmonary failure. Kennedy also visited the family of a 6-year-old girl who died in February. According to a post on Kennedy's X account, as of Sunday, there were 642 confirmed cases of measles across 22 states, 499 of those in Texas. Kennedy says he spoke with Texas Governor Greg Abbott and redeployed Centers for Disease Control teams to Texas. Still to come, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C. for talks with President Donald Trump. What topics are on the agenda? Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is going to Panama this week, matching growing U.S. concerns over the Panama Canal. Thousands rally in Paris to back Marine Le Pen after a court banned her from elections. The ruling has sparked debate in France over fairness and political motives. More on that after the break. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will meet with President Donald Trump in a few hours. Kyiv wants to align with the U.S. over a minerals deal. And Trump says China is close to approving a TikTok deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in the U.S. He will meet with President Trump at the White House this afternoon. The president commented on the upcoming talks yesterday.
We're going to talk about trade. And we're going to talk about the obvious subject. You know what the obvious subject is.
Do you have any news for us?
I'm trying to do trade just to keep it down. There's a lot of things going on with the Middle East right now that have to be silenced. You know, we had no problem with the Middle East. Everything was done. We had no problem with Iran. We had no problem with anybody. And then you had October 7th. And that was all because Iran, as you know, was not giving money to anybody because they had no money. Now they have a lot of money. So we'll see what happens.
Netanyahu said yesterday he hopes Trump will ease the tariffs. Israeli goods exports to the U.S. now face a 17% tariff. The U.S. is Israel's closest ally and largest single trading partner. Israel moved to cancel its remaining tariffs on U.S. imports last week. The Prime Minister also met with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick yesterday. Talks also focused on new tariffs imposed on Israel. And a Ukrainian delegation is set to visit the U.S. this week. That's to move forward with the negotiations for a minerals deal. Ukraine's deputy prime minister announced this week's meetings on X today. She says the goal is to align on project selection, legal frameworks, and long-term investment mechanisms. President Trump wants to use Ukraine's rare earth minerals as a financial guarantee for the money the U.S. is sending. Negotiations halted after Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky got into a disagreement during a meeting in D.C. After the talks, Trump and Zelensky both agreed to meet again. Apple is appealing to a British government order to create a backdoor to its encrypted cloud storage systems. The appeal comes after the UK's Investigatory Powers Tribunal denied an effort by the British government to keep details of the proceedings private. The court's ruling follows a closed hearing in London last month. The Washington Post reported in February that Britain had issued a technical capability notice to Apple. The order would have enabled access to encrypted messages and photos even for users outside the country. In response, the iPhone maker removed its most advanced encryption for the cloud called Advanced Data Protection for new users in Britain. Apple shares were down 7% in pre-market trading. And President Trump said yesterday that China was close to approving a deal for the sale of TikTok. He said the communist nation backed out over the new reciprocal tariffs on Chinese imports. TikTok is required to divest its U.S. assets or face a nationwide ban. Trump has effectively caused that ban until mid-June. Parent company ByteDance said last week that it was discussing a potential solution with the U.S. government. It says any agreement with Washington will be subject to approval under Chinese law. Trump last week extended the deadline for TikTok to divest from its Beijing-based parent company by 75 days. Several bidders have expressed interest in purchasing the social media app. Those include Amazon and a group led by OnlyFans founder Tim Stockley. And Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is going to Panama this week. It comes after a deal to sell ports on the Panama Canal to U.S. firm BlackRock has not gone through. The Hong Kong-based company C.K. Hutchinson agreed to sell its stake in the canal, but was relentlessly pressured by the Chinese communist regime to back off the deal. President Trump sees control of the canal as a matter of national security. His views are that the Chinese Communist Party holds too much influence over it, and Panama has violated its neutrality treaty. While Hegseth is in Panama, he plans to attend a security conference and meet Panama's president. The U.S. also plans to continue ongoing joint military exercises with Panama this week. Hegseth and Panama's president in February agreed to expand military cooperation and safeguard the canal. And the U.S. has blocked the import of sea salt from a major South Korean sea salt farm. This is after the farm was accused of using slave labor. Customs and Border Protection issued an order against Taepyeong Salt Farm, which says there are reasonable indications of the use of forced labor there. The company is located on the island of Sinan, where most of South Korea's sea salt products are made. Taepyeong is the country's largest salt farm. It produces approximately 16,000 tons of salt a year. South Korean officials said this was the first time a foreign government had blocked imports over concerns of forced labor. And Marine Le Pen's supporters in France took to the streets in Paris yesterday, calling her election ban unfair. As the nationalist leader surges ahead in French presidential polls, some politicians label her ban a political decision. NTD's international correspondent David Vives has that story.
Thousands of supporters rallied over the weekend in central Paris to back French right-wing leader Marine Le Pen after a court ruling threatened her political future. Last week, a Paris court convicted Le Pen and other national rally members of embezzling EU funds, sentencing her to a 5-year ban from running for office and a 2-year prison term, with 2 more years suspended. Protesters said that Le Pen's incapacity to be elected was the most problematic issue.
What we find unfair isn't the trial itself. It's the fact that the sentence takes effect immediately, despite the fact that she has appealed, as she has the right to. That appeal restores the presumption of innocence, and so it should be respected. The fact that the sentence is being applied immediately will prevent her from taking part in the next presidential election. This ineligibility removes a candidate from the next elections. For me, it's really problematic.
Marine Le Pen emphasized that her movement would remain pacifist, following Martin Luther King's example.
We invite all French people committed to freedom to stand by our side in a pacifist and democratic resistance, a people's patriotic resistance.
With 37% of voters supporting her, Le Pen is ahead in the polls for the next presidential election. She deemed her sentence was not a court decision, but a political one. The French Minister of the Interior agreed with this stance. He said Le Pen's conviction was due to, quote, red judges, meaning that a significant number of judges are opposed to Le Pen's party and are politically involved through the primary union of judges. David Vives, NTD News, Paris.
Amid Trump's tariffs, Britain has watered down net zero emissions rules for vehicle sales in a bid to support their automotive industry. But critics say these changes are tinkering around the edges and won't help the industry. NTD's international correspondent Malcolm Hudson has more for us.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer plans to back British brilliance with support for the electric vehicle car industry. He relaxed sales rules for electric vehicles amid fears President Trump's tariffs on cars will hurt the British car industry.
We're going to help car companies based in Britain reach the targets in a way that supports growth. We're going to cut down any fines, which I don't want or expect to see, by 20%, and any money that's raised will be invested directly back into support for the British car industry.
Currently, at least 28% of new cars sold in the UK must be electric. That target will continue to rise each year until 2030, when all new gas and diesel car sales will be banned. Every car a manufacturer sells in Britain that does not meet the latest emissions standards faces a fine. The fine was around $19,000 per car. Now Starmer has reduced it to about $15,000. Additionally, manufacturers will now be given more freedom in how they will meet their yearly targets. If they don't sell enough electric vehicles in 1 year, they can make it up by selling more the next year. Starmer also announced that elite car manufacturers like Jaguar and Aston Martin will not need to stop selling gas and diesel cars by 2030. However, Reform UK party leader Nigel Farage said this isn't going to make much difference for the car industry.
Last year was our lowest level of car production since 1954. The EV mandates, the electric vehicle mandates that were put by the last Conservative government have been destroying the car industry. And all the Prime Minister is doing this afternoon, frankly, is fiddling around the edges. Even without America and tariffs, our car industry is in crisis.
Starmer and his government have repeatedly said they will not implement reciprocal tariffs.
It's in nobody's interest for there to be an escalating trade war, and this constant ratcheting up of tariffs is bad for global demand, it's bad for prices, which means that it's bad for British consumers.
Though they are still considering all options for how to respond, Starmer has spoken to the leaders of France, Germany, Canada and the European Commission in recent days as governments plot a response to the tariffs. He said they are looking to reduce trade barriers to maintain free and open trade across the world. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News, London.
Still to come, Shenyun Performing Arts graced the stage at Lincoln Center in New York City. Find out what the audience had to say after seeing the performance. Watches are often luxury items, but they don't have to be. At an annual watch trade show in Geneva, some watchmakers are looking to make their timepieces more accessible. More on that after the break. Nearly 100 bomb threats made against a U.S.-based classical Chinese dance group. Who or what is behind this extensive attack campaign? A police investigation in Taiwan now reveals a possible link with China's tech giant Huawei. Here's a closer look.
New York-based Shenyun Performing Arts is now touring Taiwan. However, several government agencies and organizations in Taiwan received a series of threatening emails. Those stated, quote, there would be shootings or bombings if Shenyun performances are not canceled. As of April 4th, a total of 13 such threats have been reported. Taiwan's Criminal Police Bureau has formed an across-agency task force to investigate. They traced the source of the emails to the vicinity of a Huawei research institute in China's northwestern Xi'an City. According to the police in Taiwan, the emails could have been sent by people related to the Chinese tech giant Huawei. They didn't rule out the possibility that they were sent from the Chinese Communist Party's cyber army based in that area. Shenyun is dedicated to the revival of China's 5,000 years of traditional culture. The performance depicts the ongoing persecution of spiritual group Falun Gong in mainland China that Beijing has been trying to cover up. The threatening emails in Taiwan are among about 100 targeting the company since last year when it toured the United States and Europe.
When we got leaked documents from China, from the Ministry of State Security and Ministry of Public Security, and they spoke of a well-coordinated and extensive effort to completely destroy Shenyun and the broader Falun Gong community in the United States, a sort of endgame scenario. We've seen large-scale attacks in a campaign by the New York Times with no less than 10 articles attacking Shenyun. And we've seen horrifying bomb threats, death threats, rape threats.
On March 30th, Shenyun received a bomb threat hours before its last performance in Claremont, California. The venue was immediately evacuated. A similar evacuation took place at the John F. Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. on February 20th. The bomb threat, just as those made to other theaters, turned out to be fake. In response to a question from NTD regarding the bomb threat at the Kennedy Center, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt condemned such actions.
Don't disrupt it. This administration will take that very seriously and hold you accountable. We obviously condemn any violence or threats of violence against American institutions.
The State Department also denounced Beijing's intimidation campaign against Shenyun. In a recent statement to the Epoch Times, the department says its annual International Religious Freedom Report documents incidents of interference against Falun Gong practitioners and Shenyun performing arts in many countries.
Shenyun Performing Arts took theatergoers in New York City on a journey through ancient China with NTD as a media sponsor. Audience members shared their reflections after watching the show. Take a look.
Shenyun Performing Arts took the stage in front of a full house on both April 4th and the 5th at the David H. Koch Theater at Lincoln Center in New York City. In the audience was a representative of New York, State Senator Stephen Chan, who honored the performers with a proclamation.
I really like that they put some of the ancient stories inside all the dance moves, so that actually people can learn about the Chinese stories as well. Of course, the other dances are incredible.
I'm mesmerized by everything, the technique of the dancers, all of the storytelling, their unique expression and artistry, the costume, the interaction with technology. This is a wonderful, wonderful show. I think it's a spiritual energy that transpires from the dancers, because it's not just a dynamic, it's not just the movement, it comes from inside and it spreads through the audience.
It was breathtaking. I mean, the abilities of the dancers, and I mean, that must be so much hard work. And they were divine beings up there. They really were.
Shenyun aims to revive 5,000 years of divinely inspired traditional Chinese culture and values from a time before communism. Through the performance, Shenyun also reveals the brutal persecution of spirituality by the Chinese Communist Party. The company cannot perform in China as a result.
Someday you will return to China and you'll be able to have these types of dances and this type of greater level of freedom in China, where people can follow their dreams and actually be politically free, which would be a wonderful thing.
They're magnificent. And keep up the good work. And I hope the tradition continues. And it's hard to believe that this was suppressed in China, because to suppress something like this is really a crime.
The music was amazing, the dances were amazing, but what even impressed me even more was the message that they were giving, you know? The whole good versus evil, which is so important, especially in this atmosphere that we have in the world all over today.
Shenyun will be performing at the David H. Koch Theater at Lincoln Center in New York City until April 13th. NTD News, New York.
Watches are often luxury items, but they don't have to be. At an annual watch trade show in Geneva, some watchmakers are looking to make their timepieces more accessible. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on some of the more affordable accessories.
Times are changing at Watches and Wonders in Geneva. The prestigious trade show is renowned for its high-end timepieces, but some brands are focusing their strategies on affordability. Watchmaker Oris has reimagined its iconic model, first launched in 1938 for pilots.
So, how do you stay relevant in these times? Well, actually, we want to make people smile. If you look at your watch and it doesn't cheer you up, you better put it away. Your watch must put a smile on your face, and that is why we do what we do.
Pieces at Watches and Wonders often go for tens of thousands of dollars or more. Oris's big crown models range between $2,000 and $4,000.
We have always made watches for people who love watches, but who can't necessarily spend a fortune on them. And we see that this is very relevant these days. It's about substance. It's about what you really get for your money.
Ming Liu is a watch journalist and industry expert. She says Oris is a good example of a wider trend.
You know, Oris's tagline is go your own way, and I think that really resonates with the younger audience. Sort of struggles and being entrepreneurial, and they've got some great entry-level watches they've got.
Raymond Weil's latest release features moon phases, chronographs, and small seconds displays. The piece is part of its efforts to grow its clientele.
We can attract a large audience of watch experts and consumers who are passionate about watchmaking, but that cannot afford necessarily to spend over $5,000 and more.
The Swiss watchmaker's Millesime collection is built around mechanical movements and priced with accessibility in mind.
Lizim collection is the collection we launched 18 months ago all over the world, for which we won the GPSG prize for the category challenge, which is the category that rewards product under 2,000 Swiss francs.
Lou says accessibility is key to welcoming new customers.
I think it's really important that there's an affordable price range, especially now. There has to be a sensitivity to the cost of living crisis and just being sensitive to the fact that some of these watches are really expensive, but if you love watches and you're passionate about watches, you still want to get into them.
But time is running out at this year's show. Watches and Wonders ends today. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
You've heard of boy meets girl, but how about dog meets whale? And a parrot at a Tennessee zoo can sing happy birthday to herself. Let's take a look.
A golden retriever in Hawaii who's obsessed with whales recently had a close encounter. Macy rides along on whale watching tours. She caught the attention of a young male whale who swam over and hung out for a bit. A parrot at the Knoxville Zoo sang happy birthday to you to herself for her 38th hatch day.
Big finish. Oh, that is great, Einstein. And I think for your hatch day, you deserve a giant peanut. Yeah.
That's right, parrots celebrate hatch days, not birthdays. Obvi. She also had a couple of other tricks up her feathers.
She has learned a bunch of animal sounds, all the way from a red wolf, yeah, to a chimpanzee. Mm-hmm.
President Trump is now welcoming Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House. Take a look. And we'll be tuning right back into this event soon, so stay with us and we'll bring you more news right after this break.